So you put on Twitter that you bought a mechanical keyboard, and you're planning on doing a video about it, right?
Yeah, I should have it edited and posted tomorrow.
So how does your wife like the clacky-clacky keyboard?
Oh, my wife loves the way it types. My wife hates the way it sounds across the house.
See, I've been thinking about getting some kind of a keyboard, because right now I use the Magic keyboard, which is Bluetooth. But I've been getting into playing an old game that I used to play again, Day of Defeat Source. Which, I mean, it's probably the only game that runs pretty decent on my Mac, because I don't have, like, the discrete graphics. I just have the integrated Intel stuff. And I find myself, while I'm playing the game, that it's almost like the keys get stuck. And then all of a sudden, my guy, I can only move one direction. And if I take my hands off the keyboard, he's still moving. And so I don't know if it's like a Bluetooth thing. I don't know if it's a game problem. I don't know if anything. I've even tried plugging in like a USB Dell keyboard that I had at the house, and it was still doing it on that keyboard. So I don't know what's going on. But then again, I think I'm having some Bluetooth trouble issue anyway, because my Apple Watch stopped unlocking my Mac like it was. So I don't know what's going on with my stuff.
Yeah, Bluetooth's funny anyway. But with these keyboards, I mean, they got different switches you can put in them, so it doesn't have to be as loud as the one I have. I mean, they're all clones of the Cherry MX switches, which just fell out of patent last year, so everybody can make them now, which is really cool.
So you're telling me you can actually, like, pop off the key and change the switching mechanism on the inside and then put the key back on?
Of course. And all the keycaps are a standard.
Lenovo.
So you can change the keycaps.
That's a great idea for your Chromebook keyboards.
No,
make it where
kidding.
The keys can pop off and pop back on very easily.
You know, then we'd have the problem of, do I super glue them down or not?
Yeah, that's probably what would happen. I would just glue them down anyway.
There you go. But no, I mean, it's cool. I mean, it types really well. But if I had the option, I would have bought it with the brown switches instead of the blue switches, because the brown ones feel like the blues but don't have the clack sound.
Oh, but you know, I kind of like the clacky sound. I know it would get annoying after a while, at least to me, but I kind of like it.
Absolutely. It's fine during the day, but when you're trying to, like, hammer out some code at 1 o'clock in the morning, yeah.
I'm sure you're just disturbing everybody on the face of the planet.
It's like taking a maraca and running around the house screaming.
So it's been, in podcast time, it's been a week since we did an episode, but in real-world time, IRL, it has actually been 2 weeks since we've actually recorded, because we recorded two shows in 1 week, because you were off, taking some time off, even though you end up having to work anyway, and then we were on spring break. So while I was on spring break, I actually came up here and worked one day, had to move some things around for our little move or whatever, and I took some time, because I finished that up pretty quick, and I was like, well, I noticed something. One of my servers had the amber light on the front, which usually means there's some kind of hardware issue. And so I was like, okay, well, and the little code on the front said power supply fan failure. And so I got to thinking, okay, if this was a Windows machine, I would probably just fire up OpenManage, the little Dell OpenManage tool or whatever, and then try to find out, like, what's going on. Because, you know, Dell, when you call into things under warranty on Dell, they're going to want, like, error codes and all this other stuff. And so I was, like, kind of proactively, like, okay, how do I do this when it's running on ESX? And so I found out that you can actually install the drivers, which are VIB files in VMware, to basically connect OpenManage to ESX. And so I did that on this one, got into it. I noticed I already had the iDRAC stuff set up, so I could have got into it that way. But I know what it ended up being was the some tension on the power cable, and one of the power cables of the power supply came unplugged. Is all it was. So it wasn't really a big deal at all. And with dual redundant power supplies, that it wasn't a problem, and I just make sure I just Velcroed it up tight and tighter so it wouldn't come out again. But,
you know, on that Velcro strap, because I know exactly how your power supply looks, does yours, when you Velcro it too tight, actually try to unplug it?
I think that's actually what happened. Or that, or I, like, because mine are, like, desktop servers sitting on a rack shelf. And I might have, like, bumped it or something when I was moving something around it, and so I might have accidentally unplugged it. But it was just weird. And so I plugged that in, and so I got to thinking, it's like, you know, I went through all the trouble to vMotion all of these VMs off of this host, had to reboot it, do all those commands in ESX command line to get this installed. I was like, well, I might as well do it to all three. Since I'm done for the day, really. Wife was on this little day trip to a park with her parents and my kid while I was at work, and I was expecting to be there a little bit longer doing my move than I thought I was going to be, but I got done quick. And so I was like, okay, well, I started that process. And then I was thinking, well, maybe this is – I also been having some trouble. I run ESX 6.5. Basically, when it came out, I installed it, and I haven't really taken the time to do any of the updates to it. And I've been having this issue with my Windows 2016 VMs where if it has 6 gigs of RAM, it basically sits, and VMware, the vCenter says that it's using about 5.85 gigs of RAM. And I'm thinking, okay, how is a file server using 5.85 gigs of RAM? And so I'd get a lot of alerts or whatever about high memory usage, and so I just changed the thresholds to try to avoid
it. Like, you got 6 gigs of RAM. Yeah. Don't email me till you use an 8.
Yeah. So I was thinking, well, maybe I'll just go ahead and do some VMware updates. And so I did that, and that's relatively easy, using the built-in update manager and vCenter server. And that actually fixed my memory allocation issue. And so now it went from using like 5.85 gigs of RAM to 720 megs. So
it's probably just reporting it correctly now.
Yeah. So, and everything was running fine. It wasn't like the servers were running, because usually when something's using a lot of memory, the thing's usually running pretty slow and almost like it's walking through molasses or something. And so, but everything seemed to be running fine. And so something was just weird. And so I upgraded the VMware, which is, like I said, through the update manager, everything works great. But then I was thinking, you know, while I'm at it, why don't I go ahead and do, like, BIOS updates and everything? Maybe I'll check to see if there's, like, an update for the Spectre and whatever, Crack.
Not Meltdown.
Crack was the Meltdown. That's what it is. Crack was the Wi-Fi one. And if your server has Wi-Fi, you might want to reconsider that. But
no lie there. But does sound like an Apple move. I won't lie.
You know, my Mac Mini, which is a server, does have Wi-Fi, but it's turned off for that. just so you know. But so I was like, okay, well, I'll go ahead and do the BIOS updates and any other firmware updates and stuff. And so I got to thinking, and I've been wanting to do this for a while, but I really didn't know how to approach it, and then you get busy doing something else, and you kind of forget to go back to it. But I was like, I know how I would update the BIOS if this was running Windows. You just download the .exe file, run, it says it's going to reboot, and it'll reflash the BIOS. And so, how am I going to do this when it's running ESX? It's not like I can download the .exe file and run it on my hypervisor. And so I got to digging, and I was like, I know that my Dell servers come with a thing called Lifecycle, where you can like pre-stage some OS deployments and things like that. And so I moved all my VMs off and rebooted, and I loaded up the Lifecycle. And then I noticed that the Lifecycle had firmware upgrades in it. And so I went there, and you're really presented with like 3 options that you could do this by. You could do like, well, maybe 2. You could do like an FTP server. You can do like a storage device or a CD. And so I was like, well, let me just go download the thing on my flash drive, plug it in, and try it that way. Well, I couldn't quite get that to work. And so I did some more digging, read another document, said, because I didn't really know like what FTP server to use. I thought it's like I had to create an FTP server and then like set it all up and put everything there. Well, no. Here's the thing. You pick FTP server, it already pre-populates with like ftp.dell.com, and you just like make sure that your little network is configured under the Lifecycle, which basically you just set it to DHCP and you're on your way. And then it basically connected to Dell's FTP server and was able to find and pull every single upgrade that I needed. It even found firmware updates for the network cards that I put in it that didn't come from Dell, like my 10 gig card and my 4-port 1 gig card. And so it updated iDRAX firmware, it updated the Lifecycle firmware, it updated the BIOS, it updated those network drivers, it updated its internal network drivers. And so I'm like, this was easy.
Isn't it awesome?
I mean, that was
I bet your iDRAC actually has the HTML5 viewer now too.
Well, mine's iDRAC 7, so it's kind of old, so it's not...
Well, that's what I'm running, iDRAC 7.
But mine's also, like, the Essentials. It's not the full version. Okay.
I did splurge when I bought these servers, and I did get the Enterprise iDRAC.
Well, I didn't quote these servers, and so these were purchased before I started working here, and so...
These are inherited servers.
Yeah, these are inherited. And so it's just... But, I mean, I basically can do what I need out of iDRAC. I don't think I can really reboot anything remotely. I don't think I have that capability, but I can see if like any hardware goes bad or if some RAM is like freaking out or something like that.
And so, and while we're on this topic, if anybody who's listening is purchasing new servers, man, it's definitely worth a little bit of extra money to either get iDRAC if you're buying Dells or the Lights Out Management if you're buying HP. I mean, it'll save you so much time.
I actually want to talk a little bit more about buying servers in a minute, but let me finish my story first.
Oh, okay.
Not to cut you off or anything, but I want to talk about that too. yeah. So it just found all of these upgrades, and it installed them. And I'm thinking, you know, and Dell's actually kind of done this for like Windows desktops too. They changed their little service tool that you download to like detect the application to like a support assist, and so it'll actually download drivers and stuff automatically for you now too. So it's just one of those things. I just wanted to really comment. It's like how easy Dell makes things. I know Dell's not everybody's favorite company to deal with, but it's like. Like, even when you have to open up a machine, everything's modular. I mean, everything's easy to get out and remove and replace. And then, like, even getting upgrades for it is just pretty easy. And so I just wanted to share that's, like, don't be scared to run your server upgrades, even firmware upgrades. It's really easy. Just boot to that life cycle. I think it's F10 while it's booting. And then I think it took two or three times to do it because it found one BIOS update. It had to upgrade to one before it could update to the final one. And then it took a couple times to actually get some of the network firmware to update. I think once it did like one network firmware, I think it did something.
It should reboot and test to make sure it passed before it moves on.
Well, it does it all, but I think when it does like one of the networks, like the integrated one, the one it was actually using, I think it might have actually like disconnected from something, and so I basically had to like reboot it and re-download some more firmware for it. So but I mean, even then, it had to do it anyway for the BIOS, and I think the iDRAC interface had to take a couple of updates too. But it's like really easy, and you know, that's just one of those things. It's like, you know, you have to do, but you always forget to do it. And it's like upgrading the VMware. It's like I just dealt with that problem when all it took was just some upgrades,
and now you're not gonna have to deal with it anymore.
No, not for a while.
Not until the new bug rears its head, right?
Yeah, not until the new bug. But speaking of update bugs, I want to know if you've ever encountered something. You're Mr. Windows 10. I'm still relatively new at it. This was kind of my first year and kind of really messing with it. Why? I'm going to ask you this question. Why? And this didn't happen to a work computer, but I've seen work computers do some strange things. Well, I've seen the one work computer that does it is my cafeteria servers. After an update, a Windows update, why does hardware mess up? That's really what I want to know.
What hardware?
My keypad terminals stopped working right after a Windows update, and I had to install a new driver, which is not a big deal. But this is the real thing that I think is funny. My wife's mom's computer, Windows 10, did a Windows update, and it got to the point where it wanted to reboot. And I think eventually she hit, like, no enough times that the mouse and keyboard stopped working until it was able to reboot.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean, luckily the thing was a touch screen, so I could still get to the reboot screen. But why is it that, and this isn't the first time I've seen that. I have actually seen like Windows updates do some funny things to even simple things like mice and keyboards. They just stop working until
you know,
update.
You know, Microsoft, I don't know what they do when a keyboard device is attached, what insanity they do to check and see if it's an actual keyboard. You know, sometimes it takes like 5 minutes before the keyboard actually finishes installing and works.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that, but I've seen, and not the updates cause it, but the sleep not suspending and coming back correctly, causing keyboards and mice not to wake back up.
I've seen that too, but I mean, it just seems like every time I get like somebody either at work, somebody saying they're having problems with their computer, whether it's a Surface Book, whether it's a Dell laptop, whether it's some piece of junk that they tell me they have at the house, they're like, "Well, it's Windows 10 and it's doing this. It's probably ran updates. Just reboot."
You know, and actually,
and
that
always takes care of the problem.
For my family, I change their settings to where they don't get the option. It's going to reboot during a low period of usage.
Well, and that's what I thought it was supposed to do.
Well, if they turn it off, it doesn't really help.
Oh, well. or they just keep hitting postpone or dismiss or something.
You know, because I know mine will let me postpone for a week up here before it's like, nah, dude, come on, we're rebooting now.
I'm thinking that's like what Microsoft has programmed in. It's like, okay, you need to reboot to finish these updates, and so we're just going to break everything until you actually reboot. But, you know, it's just sort of ironic because after this happened, like a few days later, I saw an article, and I'll have to try to dig it up for the show notes, that saying Microsoft was actually going to change the way they were doing updates again.
I know, and actually, I'm okay with what they're doing. They say it's going to be slower, but the perception is that it's going to be faster.
Because apparently people complain it's like when the thing is updating itself, I guess the system resources just really take a hit. Well, in my case, it's mice and keyboards.
It's not necessarily that. It's when you know how it says restart, and then it says installing updates.
Yeah, that does take kind of a while.
That takes forever.
Especially if you're on a spinny drive.
Yes. And I think what they're going to end up doing is stream those little services and whatnot during the actual login process. So it'll appear faster.
Well, as long as they don't break the mouse and keyboard.
I guess they wouldn't log in anyway then, right?
I mean, and it's like they sent, and I contacted the, going back to the cafeteria computers, I contacted the company because I was like, look, it's like I installed it because when I put those computers in, I actually did a server migration of the cafeteria software. And so they sent me everything that I needed. And I told them, it's like, look, I'm going to be moving the back end part to Windows 2016. And I want to move my clients to Windows 10. Are there any known compatibility issues? And they're like, no, here are the latest updates. You can download and install those and you'll be good to go. And so I downloaded and installed what they did. But the lady that responded to me, the from the tech support, she says, yes, it seems like we always have trouble after Windows updates with the keypad stopping working, and we found that if you install this newest version of the driver, it seems to take care of it. And so,
well, on Windows updates, I have a unique problem here, and it's only with one of our administrators here. But they were using a tool. I'll have to look up the website, but it was basically a MAPI protocol emulator. So when someone was to right-click and say attach device and email, it would fire up and attach it in Gmail. It hadn't worked since Fall Creators Update installed, and I haven't found another one that does since then. What in the world did they do to break this?
I just don't know. I mean, it's Windows 10. I mean, I don't want to be one of those fanboys and be like, Windows is garbage, everybody needs to use Mac. I feel like each platform has its place, and I actually had a rant on Twitter about that earlier today. I don't really want to get into that right now. Well, maybe in a little bit when we talk about the Apple event. But it just seems like that, I mean, the problem with Windows 7 and Windows, I guess, in general, is it seems like there's always an update, always. And they were supposed to kind of streamline that to like once a month, but it seems to be more than once a month from what I can see. And then it's just like, the only problem I ever had with Windows 7 is like it would just keep nagging you with that yellow screen, postponed 10 minutes or 4 hours, and it would just keep coming back. But it seems like Windows 10 updates, they break things. And I don't know going on.
Well, when they do these things like Fall Creators and whatnot, they're actually fundamentally changing the whole Windows OS. And that's why you end up with like the Windows.old folders and whatnot. But I feel that the user base is now all Windows insiders. I feel like the normal Windows install is Windows insiders. Things change a lot now.
Because there's always something. And it's like, I get adding features and doing all that. And it's great that Microsoft is moving towards this because it's making it not seem stagnant when you sit on an OS for 12 years, like Windows XP, or 10 years, like Windows 7 or whatever it was. But, I mean, come on. I mean, don't break a mouse and keyboard. I mean, how do you do that?
I think they do have their long-term service branch that doesn't do things like these updates. It does security and critical patches, but no new features. And I think that if they do have that branch for us enterprise people that we could use, but that's boring.
Yeah, where's the fun in that? I mean, it's like, especially when they're coming out with new features that are replacing things that my people use, like, heaven forbid they actually use Movie Maker.
But I was actually going to use that one as my example. When are they going to release that? Because the Photos app is not a Movie Maker replacement.
Yeah, but when they throw it in Paint 3D or whatever they call it, they throw in Movie Maker into that. Wasn't it Paint that they threw Movie Maker into or something?
And it was the Photos app.
Photos app. And so it's like, I kind of need that. I kind of need those new features because my people might want to use them. And so, but I just can't have it breaking hardware. I don't want to get to the point where, and it will happen, and if it continues to cause hardware problems. But I mean, like I said, that was my wife's mom's computer, my mother-in-law. But like, if it really, and I've only had it happen really to the cafeteria computers and maybe a couple other. But if it comes a widespread problem, I don't want to be that guy that turns off Windows updates.
You can't.
I mean, but I also don't want to deal with hardware failures all the time because of an update.
Well, they do give us the ability to not automatically approve, so we can test things.
Well, who's got time for that?
Amen.
Who's got time to test updates? I mean, isn't that Microsoft's job to test these updates? I mean, which
well, they
Microsoft?
Do, but
you can't tell me Microsoft doesn't have a mouse and keyboard plugged in.
Well, I mean, they might not have one that has that USB identifier. There's a lot of different hardware, and that's actually one of the Microsoft's struggles, and that's one Apple doesn't have because they only make like three things.
Yeah, but okay, since you went there, let's go ahead and talk about we have an Apple event coming up that is actually education-focused, which, being an Apple fan, I mean, that kind of excites me. No, not a fanboy. Well, maybe just a little, but... this is what I tell people. I was like, I will run Apple stuff at my house all day long, but do I want to manage nothing but Apple computers? I don't know if I would want to do that. I really don't know, especially since Apple is gutting my Mac OS server, basically of all the features needed to run Macs in an OS and in an enterprise environment.
I didn't know it was still existing. I thought it was just some application you installed now.
I mean, it doesn't do just web servers and stuff like that on a Mac, or VPN servers, or DHCP servers. It ran like their their Active Directory replacement. And so
To say it was an Active Directory replacement is a bit far stretch. Well, it is a crappy LDAP server.
Well, okay. Well, their crappy LDAP, their user management, identity management stuff. I mean, they're ripping all that out. Well, I think they are. I don't know 100% sure. I have to look that up.
That's LDAP. Well, how can they rip out LDAP?
But I mean, they're pointing you towards open source solutions, which I don't even know may or may not run on the Mac itself. You might have to have some kind of Linux VM or something to actually run.
389 should.
But I mean, it's like they're gutting their one tool that they had left for enterprise and education. And so that's kind of why I don't really want to run everything on Mac OS. And sometimes, and I know Jamf and things like that make things a lot easier when it comes to Mac management, but we don't give our users admin rights, and I have to type in my admin password on my Mac a whole heck of a lot. And so it doesn't matter what I do, it seems like I'm typing in my admin password, which is a great security feature, but I mean,
but
when you can't really
do anything. I gotta poke a little on that real quick. If you're having to type it in a lot, why is Apple making those functions have to be elevated to root?
That, I mean, well, this is mainly like installing applications, things like that, or changing some system preferences and things like that. A lot of it has to have admin rights. But I get, I mean, and there's a lot of things that I do that a normal user won't do, so that's probably not an accurate statement to be like, that's why
I don't
want to do it.
Can't generalize it that far.
Yeah, but I mean, cost is the main reason why I don't want to do it. Let's just be honest. The hardware is nice, but the cost is terrible.
We can always go with that platform that I said is the only one I can trust, really.
Oh, yeah. Which one was that one?
The Raspberry Pis.
Oh, yeah. Your tweet. The Raspberry Pi. Everybody gets a Pi.
There you go.
Everybody gets the Mozilla browser that comes pre-installed in
it's Chromium now.
Oh, Chromium's the thing
Chromium
now?
Chromium. Yeah, they've moved to Chromium.
Okay. And so.
So it's a blue ball.
Yeah. Apple's holding this event. It's going to be education-focused. And what kind of got me torqued up a little bit today was I was listening to a podcast on my way to work today, and somebody said that, and these are people that actually consider themselves like tech analysts or Apple analysts or whatever. And so they basically said, we're hoping that Apple can come up with something to compete with the Chromebook problem. And it was that phrase, the Chromebook problem. And that just sort of really got me torqued up. And I'm like, and I've literally even out loud told the speaker in my car, the Chromebooks are not a problem. That's not the problem. The problem is, and I said this on my Twitter rant, that Apple is almost like out of touch with education and enterprise, and they've gone more consumer focused. I mean,
again,
gone are the days that, I mean, and there was like, and they're like, oh, we went to school and we all had Apple IIs and we played Super Bunny and all that other stuff on there. And,
but you know what? This is going to sound really mean. I really don't care what you did in 1988.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. But back then, it was like Apple cared about education and they made some really good deals with schools to buy computers. I remember when I was in like fifth or sixth grade, that was all our computer lab was like Apple IIes. And so, and I think my first, I guess BCIS, is that what it is? Business BIM class?
BIM, yeah.
I think we called it like BCIS back in the day. Mm-hmm. I think the first class I really learned typing and stuff on was like an old Mac, an old classic Mac. And so Apple had this great, they cared about education, and so they made good deals, and they made education lineups and stuff like that. And so, but what I want to know is, what do you think this event's going to be about? Obviously, it's education-focused because it's at a high school.
You know, one of the things I think they're going to do, and they had alluded to this not too terribly long ago. In fact, they included it on the education purchasing site, the MacBook Air 11s, discounted for education. So I think there may be something that they're doing there as far as maybe special pricing for MacBook Air 11s because we all know that's old hardware. So the cost to manufacture is really low at this point because, I mean, that processor is, what, six generations old that they had put in there. It's not new.
But in reality, I mean, they probably could update that thing and probably still keep the price low.
They could. I mean, I can – if Apple was serious about – if they were serious about education and cost reduction so education could afford it, they would put something like one of those Pentium G series in there where they got a quad-core Pentium. And it would give, they wouldn't have to rewrite any of the drivers because, I mean, it's Kaby Lake architecture, whatnot. So all their stuff would work just like expected. It'd just be a little bit slower.
Yeah. And it's like, the big rumors are there's going to be like, they're going to lower the price of the MacBook Air or they're going to update the MacBook Air and still lower the price. There's going to be a new MacBook, which is like the Retina MacBook, the little one port, skinny little number, which is an absolutely gorgeous machine, but it's like super slow. That they're supposed to make like a 13-inch version of that, make it sub $1,000, which means,
dude,
it's going to be like $999.
You know, deep down inside, I really hope they bring back that ugly eMac.
Yeah, and that was actually what they talked about on this podcast that I was listening to.
Did they
to.
Really talk about the eMac?
They talked about the eMac because it was an education lineup. There was an eMac and there was like the ePad, I think is what it was. And the ePad wasn't as successful, but people love the eMac. In fact, the eMac actually left out of education market, actually went to the consumer market too, because people wanted them because it was a low price machine. And so, but
it was basically an iMac that wasn't pretty.
But ideally, here's what we're going to get. I'll tell you what we're going to get. They're going to drop the price on the iPad some more is really all it's going to boil down to, because they think, Apple thinks, and this is some people's school of thought, and I'll kind of give you my idea about it. We've probably already talked about it in the past based on what like I do in my environment. But basically, I think what they're going to do is they're going to drop the price of the iPad, the entry-level iPad, and it's probably going to be closer to around $300. Well, no, it's going to be like $250, I think, is probably what it's going to be. Because education can get it right now for like $299. And because they think, in a lot of people's mind, that the iPad is the actual competitor for the Chromebook. And I think people actually have that mixed up. I think Apple needs to come out with some kind of, I think what you said, they need to take the 11-inch Air, which still sells for Apple for education market, like you said, and they need to like update it, and they need to get that price down, like way down. I don't even care if they make it out of plastic.
I mean, honestly, I mean, all it needs is that, seriously, that Pentium G series, quad core, put a 64 gig solid state in it. Who cares? Because you're going to hopefully tag in into your iCloud drive anyway.
Well, that's the thing. As a side note, with Apple School Manager, the way they do manage Apple IDs now, you can only get 5 gigs of storage. And there is zero way for the user to buy more storage, and there's zero way for the administrator to buy more storage on a managed Apple ID. And so I am wondering is, hopefully, maybe we get some revamps to that where... because here's what Apple really needs to compete with Google. Apple needs to make a G Suite competitor is really what they need. They need to do unlimited iCloud storage for education. They need to let you run your own domain on iCloud Mail. They need to let you run basically everything like you do on Google and G Suite. You need to be able to do on iCloud.
I got it.
What's that?
I got their fix. And this is going to sound stupid, but it would fix it. Just partner with Office 365.
That would probably work. I mean, because
that would be awesome.
You could get your identity management and you can get your storage.
You'd have Azure AD for centralized authentication. You would have all of the Office apps for real-time collaboration. You would have the cool, edgy hardware of Apple. Plus, you would have all those management tools that they have been working with Microsoft to integrate more with Jamf, haven't they?
Yes, they have. Well, or Jamf has been working with Microsoft, not so much Apple.
Well, Apple doesn't work with anyone. But
So if they were to announce this, would Bill Gates have to be on like a really big screen up behind Tim Cook?
Going. But, no, but that could be a solution rather than a homegrown thing. But wait, you did talk about how they moved off of Azure and now they're on Google's cloud.
Yeah, they are running on Google Cloud now.
So that's not going to happen.
But I mean, Apple's got to come up with a solution for that, and then Apple's got to drop the price on that device. And iPads are great in schools. Don't get me wrong. We have some iPads in grades 2 and lower, kindergarten, first grade, or pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. Use their iPads and they love them. But for third and fourth grade on up to 12th grade, we use Chromebooks because you have to look at. And I might be crazy for running a dual environment, or really three-part, because I'd use Windows, Apple, iPads, and Chromebooks. And so I must be like one of those weird people. But I'm sure there's other ones out there to do this thing. But it's like, if they bring the cost of the iPad down, I mean, they got to bring it down so low that you can buy a keyboard case to go with the iPad and still keep it sub 250. I think is the only way that's really going to...
Let me ask you a question. What did you just pay for your Chromebooks?
Like $150.
Okay. There's the bar.
But then you hear these same tech analysts say, yeah, Lenovo and them, they got Chromebooks for $150, but I wouldn't recommend to anybody to buy a $150 Chromebook. And I put on Twitter today, I would absolutely recommend buying the Lenovo N23.
And in fact, you know what? Someone in my family, my brother's fiance, she wanted an inexpensive laptop to go to school. I told her to go get, and this was when the 23 wasn't out, I told her, go get you an N22. Get the Windows version. It was the same price.
Yeah, and so, I mean, they got it. Now, yes, it's a $150 laptop. The trackpad's not as good. The keyboard's kind of mushy sometimes.
But does it matter?
The N22's broke. But, I mean, these are for students.
Do you honestly think that if you put a $1,500 MacBook in front of the kid, they're not going to rip the key off?
They're going to treat a $1,500 computer just the same as they treat a $150 computer.
Yeah.
They're going to treat a $150 computer the same that they treat a $400, $500 iPad.
Yeah.
I mean, and so you have to factor in those prices, like the cost. And so it's like, but just, they just got me torqued up about calling the Chromebooks a problem. It's like, Chromebooks are not the problem. The problem is Apple cares more about their margins than they do their education customers. And so everything is high-priced. And it's 100% right.
And I get it. You're a public company. That's fine. Your sole purpose to exist is to create profit. Yes, you can say it's to be creative, but you have shareholders. Your sole purpose is to create profit.
But you can't tell me that Apple can't give education a bigger cut. I mean,
of course they can.
They can afford it. Apple is about to become a $1 trillion company. And so, they're about to become a $1 trillion company, and they can afford to discount things a little bit more for education. And, you know, maybe that's what we're going to get. It's like, I'm just glad they pre-announced their watch bands. So we know we got new watch bands coming. They're not going to use stage time to talk about watch bands. I think there's going to be some revamp. Because the last time they kind of did an education-focused event was back in New York, I think maybe a few years ago, where they said iBooks was going to revolutionize the textbooks industry, which has not happened as of yet.
The only thing that did was drive all the vendors to make an online version of all their books.
Yeah.
That wasn't iBooks compatible.
which is fine, but we still have to use a browser to get to it. And so that's why
that's my Chromebook.
And that's another reason why we use Chromebooks. And that's what I put on Twitter. It's like we could put iPads in the hands of our students all the way up to 12th grade. And sure, they can do some cool things with iMovie and GarageBand, but state testing requires keyboards in some instances. And not only that, it's like the rules are...
Single application,
which you can do on an iPad, but it's a little bit different.
Remotely and easily?
Well, I mean, it just all depends on how soon Jamf can send the configuration to it. I mean, which is kind of the same as the Google. But, I mean, it's also, we talked about when we bought mice for the Chromebooks. It's like, if you have one for one student, you have to have them available for all the students. And so, it's either supply keyboards or don't supply keyboards. And so, some kids are going to need, and like the writing test needs a keyboard. You're not going to sit there and type out that writing test on that screen.
I have a weird problem. Iowa, and this is probably one of the one of the reasons I don't like Apple devices. Their touch digitizers and my fingers don't get along. It doesn't recognize when I touch it, and it drives me crazy.
You're probably one of those edge cases. Your arm would probably like break out in a rash if you put on an Apple Watch too. You're probably like one of those like anomalies of a person. It's like one in like 400 million people. It's like
and that's one of the, and it frustrates me because we have some people here with iOS devices for phones, and I'm not even gonna say, I can't even say iPhone, can I? It's iOS device for a phone, but. And they always bring them to me to work on because those are the only ones we have problems with. And I go to like try to smash on buttons and it won't respond. It drives me crazy.
But yeah, it's just, I think Apple's got a lot of catching up to do in the education market, which is really strange because they used to own the education market.
That was the bread and butter for a long time.
I mean, they owned it.
Back when Scully ran the company.
Yeah. Bring back Scully. No, not really.
Yeah, Mr. Pepsi.
But yeah, and so it's they got a lot of catching up to do. And like people, analysts are like reading into the invite and saying, oh, this is like some nice pen script. So maybe the Apple Pencil support is coming to like the baseline model of the iPad.
Who cares?
I mean, yeah, that would be great, but that is another $100.
That's $100 for a stylus.
That's another $100 on top of the device. So you're going to spend, let's say they drop the price to $250, which is fine. $250 for the iPad. Which you can probably get a 10-pack bundled with 3-year Apple Care, so $250 plus probably another $75 for the Apple Care, I think is what it is. You get a bit of a discount for the Apple Care, or maybe it's $100 for 3 years. And so $350 with the Apple Care, or you could do a third-party warranty for like $20 a device per year, which, I mean, depending on how long you keep it, you're going to reach the price of the Apple Care. And then so $100 for a decent keyboard cover or keyboard case. Or you buy a whole bunch of dongles and USB keyboards, and then you buy, and then you buy the $100 pencil, and so here you are, you're over $500 easy.
You might as well have just bought them a nice Dell laptop.
Yeah, you could buy
an XPS.
You could buy a nice Dell Chromebook or something.
Yeah,
and so I just and to top it all off, I mean that and just they need to have. They need to have something in the back end to compete with G Suite. I mean, 5 gigabytes of iCloud storage is not going to help because people are going to buy the lowest storage iPad that they can to save
well, I mean,
price for school.
And how many people do you know that actually pay Apple for more storage in iCloud?
I do. But
how many people do you know? You don't get to know yourself.
well, I mean, everybody that ever always complains to me when their phone says your iCloud is out of storage, I'm like, just pay a dollar a month. it's all it is. It's a dollar a month. Pay $12 a year and you can get 50 gigs. And that's and the prices of that stuff is expensive. They need to drop the price of iCloud storage down too.
Yeah, because I pay a dollar a month to Google for 200 gig.
I pay $3 a month for 200 gigs that me and my wife share between us. Which, that's ridiculous. It should be like a dollar. For $3, I should be getting like 500 gigs to a terabyte. I mean.
Yeah.
but yeah, I am kind of excited about the event. I want to see Apple succeed in education again. Now, I am too far gone into Google and Chromebooks to turn around and go back. So
no, we've had those discussions.
Not going to happen.
No, and it's only getting better. In fact, when we're about to get containers on our Chromebook, so we'll be able to run full desktop apps.
Yeah, and Google is just making those Chromebooks better and better. I mean, you got the Android apps you can run on them now, certain models, but eventually it's going to come to all of them.
Well, any of them produced that were manufactured last year and on up, are going to have to support it.
Well, good. So, I mean, those features are coming. So you're going to get to run Microsoft Office on a Chromebook in no time. So it's coming.
I do.
And so, I mean, Chromebook, Google is just, it's almost like they keep innovating and innovating more and more. And it's like,
they've almost built Windows.
They're focused on education.
They are.
I mean, and like I put in my tweet, I was like, Google found a market that has been ignored by a lot of technology, a lot of the industry and technology for a long time. Microsoft seemed like it gave up on education. Apple seemed like it gave up on education because everybody's prices continued to raise. And, like, we were, like, probably the number one users of Windows XP.
So I believe it.
So, I mean, it happens. But Google found a market that needed to be that had a need, and they filled it.
You know, and I think Google was thinking a little farther ahead in the future because they realized, hey, we're going to expose all these young folks to this product, and they're going to get used to using it, and then they're going to go out into the business world, and they're going to be the ones making business decisions.
And that's what a lot of these analysts are saying too. It's like they're people. You're going to. There's a high probability that you're going to use later on in life when you get out of school what you learned on and what you're most comfortable using. And if that's G Suite, Google's got a future customer.
And there's been companies left and right leaving even Office 365 to go to the Google Suite because, man, they're just doing some pretty awesome things. Heck, last week they released a VPN product even.
So... But yeah, so but like I said, I'm interested. I want to see Apple succeed. I want them to have a $150 laptop. I want them to do it.
I wish they would, but I don't see them going that drastic. Now, if they quit making it out of aluminum and went to a polycarbonate, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to get over it, Apple. It's going to be a little thicker. It's fine.
And that's the
some people like them thick.
People were talking about like to maybe lower the price of the iPad even farther, and they talked about like that they want rugged cases and stuff for them, and so maybe they should just change the whole form factor to be more rugged, make it with like a rubber back or something like that.
I think that what they need to do for that is, all right, this is going to be completely backwards from how it really always works, but go look at the Samsung Active tablets. Do that, Apple. You own the tablet market. Copy their rugged design. Yeah, no one will even notice.
Yeah, and it's like your people's repair costs will go down. Sure, it'll be a little bit heavier and bulkier. But like,
it probably
in my
won't be as heavy and bulky as an OtterBox.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's either that or just throw in a free case, like a free OtterBox or something when you do it. I mean, they've got to do something to compete, and they got to drop their prices down because people won't admit it, and you won't. Besides them calling the Chromebooks a problem, it's hearing all these tech analysts or whatever talk like they know what's going on in education when they're not even in education just kind of gets me all worked up too. But it's like, if you're going to talk about it, have somebody on your show that's in education or that does education and analysis when it comes to technology or whatever. There's plenty of people out there that does it. But, I mean, it's like...
This may sound mean, but a lot of these podcasts are Apple fanboys.
They are. I'll admit that, and I listen to a lot of them because I'm kind of a fanboy.
I mean, you can be that way, and maybe that's why I don't listen to as many as I used to be because I'm so resigned to whatever.
But that's the thing. It's like they won't come out and just price is the number one driving factor when it comes to education purchases. I mean, let's just be honest. It is. I mean, sure, there were things I would love to buy, but I can't buy them because it's too expensive. Or I have to make compromises and sacrifices. Like, I'm starting the process of getting some quotes for some new servers because it's server refresh time. And so, yeah, there's some things that I'm picking. Like, you mentioned the iDRAC thing, and I put in there when I was talking to my Dell rep, I was
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you looking at any Epic products?
No, I just went with the Intel stuff.
Why?
Well, because the model I'm looking at doesn't really offer Ryzen as an option, and so I don't know. But it's like price is like the driving force. I mean, sure, I would love to put an iPad Pro and a pencil and a smart keyboard in the hands of all of my students and all.
I
of
would
my
not
teachers.
Because they're going to throw the iPads and they're going to stab each other with a pencil.
Well, true, but I mean, but you get what I'm saying. You'd love to be able to give everybody a nice device, a Chromebook with a nice trackpad like yours. I mean, you would love to about everybody the Samsung Chromebook Pro or whatever
Asus
you have.
C302.
Yeah, and so I mean, but when you have to buy in bulk, I mean, it's one thing to buy one computer for your house, but when you have to buy 1,000 of them for a school, I mean, you're talking a little bit different numbers.
Oh yeah.
And so price is like the driving factor. And then you have to really evaluate your needs. Because what it boils down to, and I said this in like the last tweet of my rant, is like what it boils down to is the education of our students is the priority, right? I mean, that's what we're here to do. I mean, the technology is supposed to enhance the education of our students. And so if the students aren't benefiting, we have to get them technology that they're going to benefit from the most. Is what I think. At least that's my philosophy. And my upper grades, I don't think they're going to get the benefit of an iPad that, say, a lower elementary would. Everybody else needs Chromebooks because they need the ability. I mean, not only for the state testing where they have to type in their little papers online now, but it's like the research that the teachers make them do. And
they need true multitasking.
Yeah, and they need I mean, that's just one way to prepare them more for the world after school. I mean, the world's not full of iPads. Well, I mean, it is kind of full of iPads, but I mean, they're not going to get an iPad when they go to work at a plant. They're going to get a computer, and it's probably going to be running something Google, or their email is going to be Google, or something like that. And so, I mean, is it really a benefit? I mean, if cost was out of the picture, I mean, if the cost of a maxed out iPad was the same cost, or an iPad with enough space and a pencil, or not even a pencil, but a keyboard. The iPad was the same cost as a Chromebook. I mean, if cost was like out of the picture, I'd probably still go Chromebook with my upper grades, just because it's more of a benefit to them.
That and it's just easier to manage.
I mean, now if we're talking like a video production class, sure, my video production class in high school, they have 3 iPads and an iMac to do some video stuff, because video stuff is better on a Mac than it is.
Hold up now.
Well, it used to be. But
is
now
it still running Adobe Premiere?
No, it's not even. It's not even running any of that stuff. She wanted some other piece of software to do it. It's like it comes with iMovie. Why are you making me buy something? But the application she bought, you would like because you've actually recommended it to me before. It's Boinks. Boinks TV.
Oh, I love Boinks, and it's got a fun name.
So, it's actually called something else now. It's like Mimeo something because Mimeo bought it.
Oh, that's just not cool.
Like called Mimeo Live or something now, and so, But no, it's not running Adobe Premiere because the cost of Adobe Creative Suite is too much. We can't afford that either.
Well, I thought you already bought it.
No, we bought Elements.
Oh, see, I actually went and bought a full 100 license for the total Adobe Suite here. As cheap as I am, I actually bought it. It's going to be worth the $2,000 a year.
I think I'm going to have to do that for the class that actually does the Adobe stuff. But right now, it's like her curriculum is based on CS6, and so that's what I'm still running. But I don't know how much longer that's going to be supported.
It does not
on
run
10.
Very good under Windows 10.
No, it doesn't. And so I've had to do some janky things to get it to work. but yeah, so we're going to have some Apple updates next week. We talked about some Windows 10 update bugs, some VMware updates, some Dell server updates. I mean, it's like and I'm talking about updating my servers. I mean, it's like the update show.
It is the update show. And speaking of updates, be on the lookout for some firmware updates for all you AMD people.
Yeah, I saw that because there was some kind of bug they found.
And it's a very misleading the way it was presented. I mean, there was 4 main vulnerabilities that they, like, this lab out of Israel, it's called CTS Labs. They had these 4 things. You know how everybody's trying to do some cutesy name when they find a problem now?
Yeah.
Yeah, Meltdown and all those things. Yeah, we got to have a cute name now. So they had these 4 things, Rise and Fall, Master Key, Fallout, and Chimera. And, well, I'm going to go ahead and preface this. Before we even get into whatever it is, all of these required local access to the metal and admin. So you had to be physically at the box with admin rights. So it's not like Meltdown and Spectre where it could be done remotely or anything. These, you had to actually physically be on the box, not even remotely.
Yeah, and so you got that little bit of security there because, like, you have to have access, physical access to it.
And one of them, man, this company, I think they were – put my tinfoil hat on real quick. I think Intel might be behind a lot of this because two of the four things that they were talking about, Rise and Fall and Master Key, yes, those were related directly to Ryzen Pro and Epic's PSP, their secure processor inside. But the other two, Fallout and Chimera, actually are not AMD specific. They are related to the ASMedia chipsets that both AMD and Intel use. So the latter of the two, Fallout and Chimera, actually affect Intel just as much as they did AMD. But throughout all the white papers and stuff from this guy, this company, when they never would reference Intel, they would say other PC manufacturers. But they would call AMD out on every opportunity they could. So it leads to a little funny now. I mean, it was, and they didn't do the standard practice of, well, we're going to give 90 days for the company and then we're going to release it to the public. No, they did 24 hours. Yeah. And this was a company of six people, but yet they were able to, they can barely pay rent on the building that they're in, and they can drop $14,000 a few different times for different people to look at it and make sure they're right.
Yeah, that seems a little sketchy.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, yes, they are legitimate problems, but the firmware fixes are going to be out in this week or so, and there's no performance degradation from it.
Yeah, I remember seeing that and so I'm thinking, all right, AMD's kind of got their act together. It's like, yeah, we're going to send out this update, and you're not going to be hit with any performance.
Yeah, so, I mean, yes, they were real problems. Be crazy for someone to actually exploit it because of the things that would have to be done. Yes, it could happen, but it was not the big uproar that they wanted it to be. I honestly think it was, what was it, Viceroy? Actually, the guy that runs CTS Labs used to be the CEO for this Viceroy. It's a financial firm where they shorted companies to make money. It almost seems like a short.
You know, here's my thinking. Let me put my tinfoil hat on. If we didn't have companies out there actively looking for things like this, do you think it would be as bad of a problem as what it is?
I don't think it would.
Do you think, like, the people actually, like, doing the malicious stuff would actually easily find the things that these people are finding?
And one of the things in the white paper they released, which it's an interesting read because they start really grandiose in the front of the paper and then they really trail off at the end of the paper and they're like, because they know people aren't going to make it that far. But they said it would be tremendously expensive to develop anything to take advantage of this.
And so, like, why even bother?
Man, one of the funniest things on the website, they have this, this in their disclaimer. And this is what makes me think that this may be from a blue semiconductor company.
Intel.
Yes. So on their website, under the disclaimer, they have on there that says CTX does not accept responsibility for errors or omissions. CTX reserves the right to change the contents of this website and restrict it to its use with or without notice. CTX reserves the right to refrain from updating this website as it becomes outdated or inaccurate.
It's crazy.
So even because, and what's one of the things that I think that's kind of not really right is because they have this little thing on their website on the main page that says existing solutions, and it just lists none.
Yeah.
So the solutions are already there, but they've already reserved the right to never update.
Yeah, and so it's like, I get, like,
it's like an assassination attempt at AMD stock price.
Yeah, it's almost like Uber. I mean,
Uber did kill somebody. Let's be honest.
I mean, that's pretty bad. And then Facebook's taking a hit. Man, but as if people didn't know Facebook was allowing this stuff to happen anyway. But that's
do you really think that they're not sharing this information? They have no products. You are the product.
But then again, we are using all the services of a company that's main job is to sell ads to people. So
yes, but we're not under a guise that we don't know what's happening. We know it's happening.
But yeah, we know that it's happening. But yeah, it just seems like more and more of that stuff is like happening. I don't know what the deal is about it, but it's not like, I know that some companies put out like bug bounties. It's like, if you find this bug, we'll give you like 10 grand or something like that. All the major players did it. I think Coinbase paid out 10 grand because apparently in certain situations.
I wish I would have known about that.
You could give yourself as much urethium as you wanted.
Oh, Ethereum.
Or ether, whatever it is. Ethereum. I don't know how to say the word.
It's Ethereum. It's not a urinary tract.
Okay. Urethium.
But no,
okay, now
on that one.
That's going to be cut.
Oh, come on. Ethereum. Now, one of the things on the Ethereum thing, I really wish I would have known about it, because Ethereum has this thing called smart contracts, and there was a bug in the Coinbase wallet where you could write a smart contract to give yourself Ethereum at an unlimited rate.
I know. It's like, but good. But like I read some article, says good luck cashing it out though. So
yeah, they fixed that.
but they paid out like 10 grand or something, or 100 grand or whatever it was, to the company that found it. It's like, maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we just need to go in like bug bounties. But it's like, I wouldn't even know what this, it's like, hey, let's get this new computer and let's just, like, hackathons or whatever those things, the DEF CON.
Yeah, pwn to own.
Yeah, it's like, I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean,
I'd be like,
how do these people even, like, these must be some super smart people. I mean,
they are. I mean, the only thing I could do, I'd be like, I'd pick it up and throw it on the ground. It crashed!
that sounds about right. But that sounds like a good stopping place.
Yeah.
I've ranted enough about Apple, and we will check in next week after the event. We won't do one of those special things where we talk right after the event. I may not even get to watch it because we're actually having some buildings wired that day. So I'm not.
So what day is it?
It's the 27th. It's Tuesday. So okay. I mean, we'll hit it. We'll discuss probably a little. Well, of course. I mean, it's education based. So yeah, we'll hit the what actually gets announced. I mean, so. Obviously we're not going to get a new iPhone or probably an iPad Pro. So I mean, all we're really going to get is like a lower cost iPad, I think, and that's going to be the main thing. And then they'll probably show off some like updates. And what's funny is all these people, they're like doing drafts and stuff about what they're going to announce and this and that, but nobody's talking about iTunes U. I mean, iTunes U is due. It's like one of their best education products, and it's due an upgrade. I mean, it's due some new features. It's like, hey, let's talk about that. I mean. So, I don't know. iBooks and iTunes U, I think, are probably going to get some updates. The Classroom app and ClassKit. ClassKit's like a rumored framework or something that where you can build like classroom stuff into your app. I think it's what's going to happen. And I think they're going to come out with like new iPads. They may drop the price on the MacBook Air, but I think that's probably about the only extent of the Mac hardware we're going to get. And so, that's my hot take.
I wish they would, though. I wish. Here's what I would like to see happen. Polycarbonate MacBook Air.
Just go back to the plastic. I mean, it ain't going to hurt nothing.
That's plastic, polycarbonate.
Some people, people like still want the black plastic MacBook. I mean, they still look for that and try to buy that. I mean, it still goes for like $400 or $500 on eBay. I mean, people still want that computer. And so, like, you make a black plastic Mac that's low cost and fast and get some good hardware in it, upgrade some, give them unlimited iCloud storage so that you can give them a 64-gig SSD.
Ooh, I got you a fun idea. Isn't hackerspace one of the cool things right now in schools? We got one here now.
Well, that's cool. What are you hacking up?
I ain't hacking up anything. I don't want to deal with the hassle of it. So I gave it to someone else. I got enough given to me. But it would be hilarious if they re-released the Apple II in kit form.
That would be neat.
That would be cool.
To learn to do some basic programming and stuff on that and build it and put it together and mod
an Apple
it. And do some
an Apple II kit.
But speaking of developers, and I'll end on this, we are now an Apple developer organization at Orangefield ISD, so yay!
Well, I fully expect to hear reports back on the applications you've written, Matt.
Well, when we got this finalized, I told my supervisor, she told me, in order to keep this active every year, so that we don't have to go through this process again, because it took like a month to get this done, because because apparently the Apple ID I created for this, I had to like put somebody's actual name on it and not just the name of the class, and had to do a bunch of crazy stuff and had to get like a contract signed and had to have permission from the superintendent to be able to sign contract. I mean, we jumped through a lot of hoops to get this done. And then we went through the process to waive the fee, which is great. I mean, it's great to waive the fee for education or whatever. But in order to keep it active and not have to do it again next year, it's like we at least have to have an app in the App Store every year. And so I told my supervisor, like, well, I guess I better learn to code.
What you need to do, just to have your app, go write you a Cordova app that's just a web wrapper that pulls your school website in.
I'm going to make sticker packs. What are you talking about? That's just a... like a window with some PNG files. I mean, I can do that. I'm going to do sticker packs. That's what I'm making.
There you
go. I'm going to make some sticker packs and sell them for a dollar. And that's going to be my retirement plan. iMessage sticker packs.
There you go.
That's the plan. But that's our show for this week. We'll check in back next week, and we'll talk about what happened and what didn't happen, more likely, at the education event. And I know we didn't really talk too much about, like, expectations. I'm more just griped about how tech analysts think that the Chromebook is a problem, and it's not a problem. The problem is Apple's lack of focus when it comes to education. But if you want to reach the show notes for this week, which is not really too much because it's just all my opinions, but it's educatingtech.net/29. You can reach out to Chris on Twitter at Feeks, and I'm at Twist of Matt. Chris also has his YouTube channel out. He had that build video of a computer that was really cool. I was actually able to add, we talked about that it was coming, and by the time I posted the episode, he actually made the video, and so I was actually able to plug it in. It was really cool. He did like a build montage. I really liked it. It was really smooth. I liked it a lot. You did a real good job on that one.
Hey, I'm working on it. Hey, we got to get just a little bit better each time.
Hey, we'll set up like a Patreon page, and so we can get some money. We'll get you a gimbal, maybe one of those like camera track things. Hey, you know, maybe we might even get enough to get you like a red camera, and you can make like some super 8K videos. How about that?
I guess I could get a red case for my Note.
Isn't that the same? And that's what's crazy is you're doing it all on your phone, and it looks great.
Yeah.
It would look better if it was an iPhone.
No, it wouldn't.
I'm just kidding. But yeah, check out his YouTube channel.
I got optical image stabilization.
I had that 2 years ago.
Well, I've had that, but and optical zoom.
I got that too. I actually know mine's digital.
Optical zoom.
Oh yeah, you got it. Optical zoom is better. I got to put like a physical lens on the back of mine.
Those are cool though.
Ollie clips or whatever they're called.
I think those are awesome.
But yeah, but be on the lookout for, he's got some more videos coming down the pipeline. I think they're going to be really cool. I think he's almost done with his keyboard one. His clacky clacky keyboard. So
clacky clack, don't come back.
And then I'm going to try to convince him. He could do the clacky clacky keyboard in his ASMR series too, where he's, he could just sit there and just like type out like some Shakespeare stuff like all day long and just put it on loop, and so that's all you can hear on the video is just him clacky 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 away. So I mean, I'm sure there's people be kind of in into that. So I mean, hey,
there's a lot of weird people in
some ASMR stuff. So that's pretty neat. But send us some feedback at educatingtech.com on Twitter, or send an email at educatingtech@gmail.com. And that's our show. We'll see you next week, where we'll be back to talk more about the Apple event that's probably going to be disappointing.
Woohoo!
See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.